appears that a serial killer is on
the... been receiving eerie phone calls from an unknown male before her disappearing battles.
Hello, all you warm-blooded humans and cold-blooded killers. How are ya? I'm trying to think of something new.
What a fantastic opening.
Especially for Christmas.
Exactly. Right? All you cold-blooded killers. What you doing?
Who's dead today?
How's that whole thing going for ya?
Did you get the blood off your hands? So, welcome back to Someone Probably Died. I am Odell.
I am Erin.
And we are here. It's December.
Joyous
month. The most wonderful time of the year.
It really is.
We're here to entertain you with some jolly fucking jingle murder.
That's right. This is my favorite. Now, I know that we love October just
we do.
Because of the horror.
Right.
However, I will say Thanksgiving to Christmas is my absolute favorite.
Really? See, I'm good like beginning of October until the end of December. New Year's Eve, and then...
I'm not good after Christmas. I go through the slumps.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to the show, y'all. We have some more fun things, and we're trying to go with holiday-themed murders or things that happened around like Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's, around this time of for this month. We also have a special that we're really, 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 really excited about, which I think will be actually the week of... Christmas or Yule, they're both that same week. So depending on, you know, maybe you don't celebrate anything, but fuck it. We're giving you this anyway.
Yes.
But these are going to be murders that happened around Christmas. We are calling it Happy Holisley.
Yes!
And since this is a special episode, it's more than likely some of these are probably going to be solved that we talk about, which I realize we're breaking away from our typical theme, but the ones that I've been finding, they've all been solved, but they're so fucking good. Like, yeah. I have to share them. So
I feel like they should be solved. Like, we should have something nice and wrapped up in a nice bow.
Right.
There's a beginning, a middle, and an
end.
A
nice and bloody bow.
A nice bloody bow for Christmas so that you will be satisfied.
Our gift to you.
Yes. The least we can do.
And you can fall asleep on Christmas Eve and wonder if it's Santa and his reindeer clomping around on the roof or if it's a serial killer.
Exactly.
So before we get started, my typical spiel, don't forget to please rate and subscribe and then go tell all of your friends and family about us. That would be like the best holiday gift you could give us. Also, don't forget to follow us on all social media. We have links on our website at someoneprobablydied.com. We're pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Not
100%.
I do have a TikTok account that I post some of our like videos and stuff, like
I
our promo videos
TikTok.
And whatever.
I should.
I use it for, I'm seriously, by the time this airs, I might actually be on there as a creator because there are some really fun people that I kind of want to be friends with that are on there. So
Yeah. You've sent me a few that I really would like to get to know.
I really want to be your friend. I really need you in my life and maybe have you come on the show. So who knows? That may be my holiday gift to you.
That's right.
Speaking of the holiday season, you know, if you're trying to figure out what to get that person who has everything, but you want to get them a nice little something, you can always go to our merch shop. We have t-shirts.
I love the one you're wearing today. That is amazing.
Girl Gyrate, Spirit Garden, what I have it, I Dance with Clowns. We just have our Someone Probably Died logo. We have podcast art, and it's not just t-shirts. I mean, we have short sleeve and long sleeve t-shirts. We have hoodies. We have sweatshirts, like hoodless sweatshirts, whatever those are called. I guess just
They're
a sweatshirt.
Just a sweatshirt, Odell. A hoodless hoodie is what we have. I think there's a name for it.
Something. It's like a hoodie, but it doesn't have a hood. We also have like backpacks, knapsacks, tablets.
We
phone
also
cases.
Have long sleeves that aren't long. Like they're cut off like around.
Right. And then we have some that don't have sleeves at all. What are those called? Like the runners wear them?
I don't know. But it's like this shirt sleeves, but without the sleeves. We've got those too.
And then if you're lucky, we might give you just sleeves without a shirt.
Oh my gosh. You know what we need to put out there? It's leg warmers.
I wonder if anybody has leg warmers that we can add.
Would so rock a leg warmer.
One of our sites does have tights, like yoga tights. So if you want yoga tights that say girl gyrate down the leg.
I know what you're getting me for Christmas. Oh my gosh, please.
Go get you some. With that said, are you ready to start?
I am
very breathy today.
Like, you are breathy. And you know what? Like right before you started, you took the biggest breath. Like you were, you did. And it took forever to get all in there.
I have big lungs.
It was like, it took so long.
Maybe it would help if I backed up from the microphone instead of trying to deep throat it. But here we are.
Hey-o. You can also find us on Grindr.
And Pornhub.
Okay.
All right. Let's start. What murder have you got for me today?
Okay. So this one, I know that we're doing like actual Christmas murders. Or Hollis Slay murders on our Hollis Slay episode. However, this one does, of course, take place in December. Perfect. Around Christmas.
Okay.
Because it is that time of year. Most wonderful time of the year.
Right.
So this one is about a woman named Latricia White.
Okay.
And that's the only one we know that is definitely dead.
Okay.
Two others probably died.
Okay.
But here we go. Okay. So back in, this takes place in Texas, back in December of 1993 in Lockhart,
okay,
a woman named Latricia was spending Christmas with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend's name is Lee Wackerhagen.
Wow.
That right there made me want this story. They called him Dub. I don't know.
Dub.
Why. Dub.
Well, Wackerhagen starts with a W, so.
Oh. Oh, that makes sense.
Look at me getting it first.
You really did. You know, Adam used to go to a place called Buffalo Wild Wings, and he called it B-dubs, but I always thought he was saying B-dubs, like the bird, and I never understood, even though that makes sense too, because it was Wild Wings. Anyway, Dub Wackerhagen and his son Chance, they were spending Christmas with Latricia. Chance was from a previous marriage. Okay. Latricia had just gotten divorced the previous month. So in November, she had gotten divorced.
Okay.
She and Dub had known each other for years. They went to school together. And Dub was also separated from his, wasn't his wife. They were common law marriage. But
got it.
They were also separated. So going through the divorces at the same time, of course, they found each other again and got together. Latricia was a nurse, and she had two kids of her own who were spending the holidays with her husband or ex-husband.
Okay.
Chance, the little boy, he was 9 years old. He was having a great time with his dad, called his mom and said, "Hey, can I stay here a few more days?" The mom was like, "Sure, not a problem." So let me tell you a little bit about this mom, because she is very active on social media with regards to this case.
Okay.
So Dub had been with this woman. Her name is Gay. He had been with her for years. Again, common law relationship. He had worked for her father, and they got together, and then they had Chance back in 1984. Okay. And everything was fine until they had Chance. Gay had a son from a previous marriage, and after Chance was born, Dub got increasingly volatile toward her and was also very cruel to her son from the previous marriage. Hmm. She says he was never physically abusive, but he was extremely verbally abusive. He was very controlling, and eventually she left. Dub seeked custody of, is that a word?
I don't know. I just thought the same thing.
Dub did seek.
That wouldn't be your, did seek. It would be sucked. He sucked custody.
He sucked custody. No, he did seek. What is wrong with us today? Dub did seek custody of Chance, but ultimately Gay was awarded primary custody. Dub could see him on the weekends. The drop off for them was at his aunt's house so that there would be no conflict.
Okay.
Everything seemed to be going pretty well. Gay did say that Dub was, very close to Chance. Like, he may not have been good to Gay. He may not have been good to her other son. He was very good to Chance. Anyway, so Dub and Latricia, they had known each other for years, went to school together, recently divorced, all of that. However, they were known to have a lot of fights. It was a very passionate relationship. So on December 23rd, Latricia and Dub got into a ginormous fight. And it was because Chance left the faucet on. No. My gosh. If Adam and I went at it every time the girls like left a light on, we would definitely be on this show. But it got bad enough to where Deb and Chance left her place and they were like, we're not going to put up with this. But they did come back for Christmas, like you do. And so they were back there on December 25th. On December 26th, they were all spotted, the three of them were spotted at a restaurant eating together. Everything seemed great. On December 27th, Latricia was supposed to go to work. She never showed up. She was very dedicated to her work. So this was odd. Mm-hmm. Her father, Jack, went to her house to check on her and everything appeared normal when he walked in. However, when he got to her bedroom, he found her dead, shot 6 times in the head.
Holy shit.
With a .22 caliber gun while she was sleeping. And that I feel is very important, that it was while she was sleeping. So this was not in the middle of a heated argument or confrontation.
Right.
6 times while she was sleeping. She had been dead for at least a day. So they think she died at some point on December 26th. Remember, they had been seen eating dinner or lunch or whatever and perfectly happy. Dub and Chance were not there, but there was a small footprint in Latricia's blood that they believe belonged to Chance.
Okay.
So obviously, you can tell who the main suspect was.
Right.
Dub is the main suspect. The search was on to find him and his son. On December 30th, they found his pickup truck in a high crime area in Austin, which was about 30 minutes from their home, from Latricia's home. So about 30 miles away.
Got it.
It had been abandoned on the side of the road. And inside the truck, they found Dub's wallet. They found his checkbook and they found a hunting rifle. Now, the rifle had not been fired.
Okay.
In the back of the truck were a bunch of Christmas presents. Some of them were unopened and they were covered in blood. At first they said there it was streaks of blood, but then they came out and said actually it was like, it was obvious someone had been horribly injured.
Wow.
They assumed that it was Latricia's blood, but when it was tested, it turned out that it was not her blood. They weren't sure whose it was.
Oh, geez.
So they figured that Dub had murdered Latricia and then kidnapped Chance, or he and Chance had fallen victims to whoever killed Latricia.
Mm-hmm.
So a few months after the murder, this is really sad, O.P. Williams, which is Chance's grandfather, he got a phone call. And on the other end of the line was a little boy, and he said, help me, help me. And then the phone slammed down.
Oh, my gosh.
OP was convinced it was Chance. However, they now believe it was just a hoax, which is so sad. That is so awful.
People are fucking assholes.
They're terrible. So then they also, the one thing that Gay was told was that there had been a phone call made from Dub's truck 3 days before it was discovered. So, I mean, like just the day after they found Latricia.
Mm-hmm.
However, she learned later, and I'll get into this, she learned later that actually there hadn't been a phone call. So that was some lead that they were chasing that actually never happened. It had been a year earlier that the phone call had been made. Mm. So after all of this, OP gets this phone call. They can't find Dub and Chance anywhere. They have no idea who killed Latricia. So the case went cold. And since then, Dub and Chance have never been found. And again, even though Gay, you know, said that Dub could be an asshole, she really did not believe that he could hurt Chance. And people who knew him and Latricia's relationship also believed that he could not have hurt Latricia.
Right.
They were passionate. They fought hard, but he didn't have a criminal record. Like there was no, he was just kind of an asshole sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So Gay hired a private investigator to try and track Dub and Chance down. She went on the Maury Povich show.
Wow.
She was invited to go on to Oprah, but she had to work. I don't know how I feel about her going on Maury Povich and not Oprah.
Right. Oh, sorry. I have to work. I would have switched my shift for Maury to go on Oprah.
Yeah. Hello. So I don't know what that was about. But in 2016, so just a few years ago, because remember, this happened back in 1993.
Right.
In 2016, the police reopened the case. They have concluded that Dub and Chance were both victims of foul play. They believe that Latricia was killed by someone close to her, and the murder was most likely a crime of passion. I should say so, being shot 6 times in the head.
Right.
I haven't been shot 6 times in the head, but her being shot 6 times in the head. Having been shot 6 times in the head, let me tell you. It was all passion. So the new officer who's on the case reported to Gay that they were looking at everything from the very beginning because he found a lot of discrepancies. Mm. So unfortunately, this is one of those cases where they had tunnel vision. They thought it was Dub. That's all they were looking at. But there was one other person that they really needed to investigate. And that is Latricia's ex-husband. Mm-hmm. Think about it. They had just gotten divorced a month right. earlier. We don't know really what custody arrangements there were. We know that she had primary custody mm-hmm. of the two kids. We know that they were spending time with him over the holidays. But he admitted that he had been to Latricia's house on the last day that she was known to be alive.
Oh.
He said he went over there to retrieve something that one of his kids had left, but he said no one answered the door. So that's really sad that they never took a look at him at all. Yeah. So here are some thoughts on this that I have, Odelio.
Please tell me.
So I figure there are a few scenarios. Mm-hmm. Either Dub really did kill Latricia. And he and Chance, like, went off the grid, right? That was their first thought. However, it's been 27 years. That's really hard to stay off the grid. And if you think about Chance is now in his late 30s.
Right. And how old was he?
He was 9 years old when it happened.
Because I have a thought as well.
Oh my God, you think he did it?
Yeah. Like, what if he, well, I guess if she was shot six times in the head.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in Chicago. Six times.
Yeah, I don't feel like, you know, because I thought maybe he accidentally shot her. But then it's like, oh, well, shit, now we got to shoot her five more times.
Yeah, and then leave. I don't think that's possible.
I don't have a theory anymore. Cancel that.
Let's say it was Dub that did it. I mean, by all accounts, he absolutely adored his child. And his child's footprint is in her blood. I don't think there's any way he would have let his child see that.
Right. And that, which is what made me think, what if Chance did it and he left with him to protect him?
Right. But my God, a 9-year-old firing six times?
I mean,
and this is while she was sleeping. Like, I think that's super important because I mean, if there had been a heated argument, there was plenty of time to cool off. And it's also not like they had been together forever. Like, I see that kind of shooting happening after, you know, 30 years of marriage. Then it's like, it's all built up and you're just going to, they've been together a month.
Yeah.
You know, or around that. I just don't, that sixth time, I cannot get over that. That mm-hmm. definitely seems like a crime of passion. And considering that everything was fine, and obviously the argument over who left a faucet on is a dumbass argument. Like, surely that is not the straw that broke the camel's back, you know?
Right.
So then, of course, there's, you know, one thing that people thought was, you know, Dub had wanted custody of Chance. And if he did kill her and knew that he was going to lose custody of Chance or never see him again, it could have been one of those, if I can't have him, no one will.
This is true.
You know, killing. But then it's weird that nothing's been found for 27 years. So they somehow have, from what the police say now, they have evidence that Dub and Chance are dead.
Okay. But you don't know what that
evidence
is.
We don't know what that evidence is. No idea. So the other thing is that we don't know. We don't think that Dub had other guns and he had that rifle in his car, but it had not been fired. So anyway, I think personally, they need to be taking a good hard look at the ex-husband.
Right. And how old were her? I mean, like, was there a jealous kid that's like, you love this kid who's not yours more than us? Boom, 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 boom.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Which would be really fucked up.
Would one of my kids do that? They keep trying to figure out who's the favorite. I haven't told them, of course. It's the dog. But that's great. Yeah, I don't think it was like, there's no talk about her kids being anywhere near there and then Chance didn't have any other kids. So I don't think it was that. But no matter what, we know that Chance saw the crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing he's the one who did it. And then considering the fact that Dub and Chance are just gone.
Yeah.
I really think it had to be. And of course, you know, this was back in the early 90s when they're, mm-hmm. you know, they cracked me up when they were talking about the phone in his truck. Like, do you remember that, having the car phone?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they were talking about that. And I also loved, a lot of this was with phones, but I love that when the kid called the grandfather, if that was a hoax, mm-hmm. that he slammed down the phone. I was like, you know what? People these days, like kids these days, would not know what that means.
Right. And do you remember what a game changer it was when Star 69 came around?
Oh my gosh, there was no more prank calling then.
No, that totally ruined my, like, I used to make my sister prank call people because I would just laugh.
Yes.
And she was really good about staying serious. So that was our entertainment. We grew up in the middle of nowhere, so we prank called people. And
I loved prank calling people. That was so much fun. I think I told you this before. I used to call my friend, and his mom would answer, and I didn't want her to know it was me, so I would have a different accent every time. I did tell you that before.
You probably
It did. Always reminds me of prank calling. I'm like, I guess that was technically a prank call.
My sister and her friend used to call this girl that they didn't like, and they would, this is so stupid now, but back, you know, when you're younger, the word horny is just hilarious.
Yes!
And they would call her, and they'd go, is your doggy horny? And hang up. I have no idea
why
it was a horny dog, but they would do that all the time. I know. The things we do for entertainment. And now we just go online and fight with each other.
Yeah, we do. Do you remember when we fought with that guy when you and I were living together and he was really into Harry Potter porn? And I said that I was Hermione 69. Or no, I was Nasty Bitch. Oh my gosh, what if that person's listening?
It wasn't us.
Nope. Nope. We just heard about it from a friend.
He's still sitting in that chat room. He's
still looking for Nasty Bitch. Because she was nasty, girl. Okay.
We're assholes.
So that's my story.
Okay, good.
Poor Latricia White. Yeah. And that's just crazy to me. I can't imagine being like the family member and someone not being found.
Well, then you're really going to love my story.
Oh, God, I love it already. What is it?
So we're going to jump in our time machine. We're going to travel back to the disco days. Ah! We're going back to 1977 in Dearborn, Michigan.
Oh, I love it.
And while a lot of this story happens around, you know, Christmas time, we're going to rewind a little bit. I'm going to go back to September, specifically on Labor Day. Okay. Of 1977.
A year before I was born.
It was. I was a few years old by then. Anyway, I won't give the specifics. On this particular day, Jarrett Betterson.
Oh my God. His
girlfriend, Susan Klingle.
What? This is like a Christmas present you are giving me. My gosh, between Wackerhagen and
Betterson,
who is it? Betterson
and Klingle.
Which
is almost like Kringle.
It's really close.
So anyway, it was Jarrett and Susan and their 2-year-old daughter, Nicole. They're out driving around when Jarrett lost control of the car and it rolled several times. Susan, the girlfriend, was ejected from the car and died. But Jarrett and Nicole both survived without serious injuries. Now, Jarrett and Susan's parents, they didn't really get along very well. Jarrett believed it was because he was black and Susan was white, and her parents, you know, didn't approve the interracial coupling. This was never proven, but, you know, it was the 70s. And Jarrett said he definitely felt that this was the cause of the tension between them. But there were also rumors that the Klingles were not so much upset that he was black, but that Jarrett allegedly used drugs and hung around with drug dealers, and they were more upset and worried about their daughter being around those types of people, not so much that he was black. I'm sure, you know, whatever was causing the initial tension between them just was amplified now that their daughter died in an automobile accident where he was driving the car. To make matters worse, there was marijuana that was found in the car as well. Oh, and they believe that he may have been under the influence. But the investigation into that was super shoddy. Lots of corners were cut. And so they were never able to charge him for this. But they were looking at charging him for vehicular homicide. But that never happened. A couple of months later, Jarrett started dating a woman named Barbara. And then on Christmas 1977, so, you know, 3-4 months after Susan died, Jarrett and Barbara, who are now dating, they took Nicole over to see her grandparents, the Klingles, so Susan's parents, and they told them that they were going to move. They were going to take Nicole, they were going to move west and start a new life for themselves. Now, obviously, the Klingles are heartbroken because Nicole was the only thing they had left. Susan was an only child, and so Nicole was all they had left of her, and she was being taken from them on Christmas Day, nonetheless.
I mean, come on.
So the Klingles asked, okay, well, you know, where are you going? Do you have an address so that we can stay in touch? And they're like, well, we're not really sure where we're going yet. We just know that we need to pick up and go. We need to, like, start over, start fresh. We don't feel like we can do it here, but, you know, we'll be in touch. From what I read, some folks who knew them said that they were told that they were moving to California, but then others say, no, they plan to move to Nevada. But there was never anywhere specific. Before they left, Barbara told the Klingles, and I quote, "I'll be a good mother to Nicole. She will be well taken care of." And then Jarrett, Barbara, and Nicole left. The Klingles never heard or saw from them again. There was no letters, no phone calls, no address, nothing. The end.
Oh, God! No. Oh my gosh.
You were sitting there like waiting.
I'm sitting there writing my notes of like questions that I have. The end. Well, I guess I have no questions. All right, there we go.
So the end of that part.
Okay.
We're going to flash forward 20 years now.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's November 1997, coming up on the holidays, close to Thanksgiving. So about this time, Nicole would be 22 years old because she was 2 years old at the time of the accident. And the Klingles decide that they're going to try and locate her. They feel like, you know, of course, I'm imagining it's the holidays. They're probably in their 60s now. Susan was their only kid. They have one grandchild. They'd really like to reconnect with someone from their lineage,
right,
more than likely. And they felt like since Nicole would be an adult now, they really want to seek her out. They want to find her, get to know her, and give her the opportunity to decide if she wants to have a relationship with her grandparents. Mm-hmm. So Jarrett and Barbara hadn't kept in touch with anyone. So they didn't tell anyone. Once they got settled, they didn't tell anyone where they were. They didn't tell the Klingles. They didn't keep in touch with Barbara's family. They didn't keep in touch with Jarrett's family. They basically just left and that was it. So
I'm sorry,
the Klingles,
that sounds like running from something.
Right. So the Klingles, you know, they had no idea where to begin. So they hired a private investigator named Peggy Bezzi.
God.
I know. So when I heard that name, I immediately pictured her as this middle-aged, redheaded woman.
Smoking, obviously.
Yeah, she has a raspy smoker's voice. And yes. Like when she answers a phone, it's like, Peggy Bezzi, PI, you yes. lose them, I find them. What can I do you for?
Now I'm mad that we never started a PI business while you were here. Peggy Bezzi.
And I also imagine like she's got this office that's in a closet, like on the second floor above like a Chinese takeout place. There's no windows, just a desk, an ashtray, and a phone.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I see this. I totally see this. So, oh my God.
Oh, it's too bad that like that's her real name. So we can't make t-shirt to say Peggy Bezzi, PI, what can I do you for? You lose them, I find them.
From now on, that is how I'm answering my phone.
I'm going to put that on my voicemail. Peggy Bezzi.
How do you spell the Bezzi?
B-E-Z-Y.
Oh, it's even better. Like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh, I love her already. Is she still alive?
I don't know. I didn't Google that much.
Oh my God. I'm going to Google her.
So Peggy Bezzi, PI.
Bezzi. Peggy Bezzi.
You said Bezzi Beggy.
We can put that on a shirt. Bezzi Beggy, PI.
With arrows like pointing from the Z's, like we're like a teacher does when they're correcting, like, no, you misspelled this. You need to move these letters. Okay.
I need to get back to my cash. That's it.
I don't care if you spell my name wrong. Just give me your money, bitch.
I don't know what the Venmo and the PayPal. Okay, we got it. Yeah.
I don't know why we made her from New York when they were in Michigan, but whatever. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Anyway. I started it. Okay, so going back to my story, Peggy, she was able to find Jarrett and Barbara pretty quickly. She found that they were living in Las Vegas and not like, you know, in the flashy Vegas Strip area, but they were like on the outskirts in a pretty rundown area from the Strip. They were getting by, but they weren't, you know, well-to-do by any means. What's weird, though, is that she couldn't find any trace of Nicole. She had a trail for Jarrett and Barbara, but no mention of Nicole. The only thing she could find was there was a paper trail of monthly Social Security survivor benefit checks that were delivered to a post office every month until Nicole turned 18, and she would have gotten these for Susan's death, so children get these when their parents die. So she was mailed the check, but to a post office, and all of them were signed for by Jarrett Betterson, her dad.
Mm-hmm.
So this is obviously weird. She figured, well, Nicole's 22 by now, so there's got to be something. So she started checking school records to see if she was ever enrolled in school. She started checking colleges. She couldn't find anything. Her name didn't exist on any school rosters in the area. She dug a little deeper. She checked adoption records. She checked police records. She checked court records. She checked driver's license records and came up empty.
Wow.
So she called the police in Vegas. She got a hold of someone named Detective Jeff Rosgen, or Rosgen, R-O-S-G-E-N.
Hmm.
When he first got the call, he was tempted to decline the offer because missing person cases happen all the time in Las Vegas, and he always came up empty. They were very difficult. So it was kind of like, why bother? But then something about the story, the fact that the parents were still alive, and, you know, Nicole was supposedly alive, but there was just no record of her. He was like, there's something to this. You definitely piqued my interest. I'll help you out. So he looked over everything that Peggy had found, and he decided that the best bet was just to go to the source, and he was going to tell a little fib just to, like, put him on the spot. So he went to their apartment, he knocked on the door, and when Jarrett answered the door, he said, look, I know what's happened to your daughter. It will be much easier on everyone if you just tell us the whole story. He said that Jarrett got visibly shaken.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I promise to get back to you in a week or so, and then he closed the door. So 4 days later, Jarrett called the detective, and he said, look, I have every intention of cooperating with you. I just need to get some affairs in order. He said, I'll be back in touch with you in a few weeks. Just give me some time. I will set up a meeting with you and Nicole at that time, and she can tell you everything. So Rajan waited a few days. He never heard anything. So he called to check in. It was like about this time, it was like right on or just after Thanksgiving. And Jarrett said, look, I still need some time getting things set up. Can you give me a few more days? So Rajan kept calling and he kept saying, I need more time. Pretty soon, Jarrett just stopped answering the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was coming right up on Christmas. And Rajan was getting ready to go on vacation. So he's like, okay, I'm going to go on vacation. And when I come back, I'll check in with him again and like give him an ultimatum. So I'm not sure of the exact sequence of events here, but at some point before Christmas, Joni Betterson, Jarrett's mom, received a handwritten letter at her home in Georgia.
Oh,
the letter was written by Barbara and it was from her and Jarrett. This was the first time she had heard from them in over 20 years. So
Again,
they had not kept in contact with anyone. But the letter read, by the time you get this, we should be dead. Jarrett is about to go to jail, and I don't want to live without him. I'm sorry about living apart from our family. I'm sorry about so many things. We've had a sad and difficult life. We had hoped our troubles would never touch our families, so we kept to ourselves. We've tried to follow God. Now it's about time for him to judge us. Go to your Bibles to see peace, and please forgive us for all the wounds we have put in your hearts and our tragic and youthful blunders. The envelope also included a money order for $900, and she requested that Joni use that to help pay for their cremation, and she requested that they both be placed in the same urn.
Oh, my Lord.
Right. So about the same time, which was, you know, just right before Christmas, the apartment manager finally went to collect rent. Like, they hadn't been paying rent. There were several eviction notices on the door. Finally, he was like, I'm going in. He went in and he found their dead bodies and he called the police. The police said there were several eviction notices on the door, as I'd mentioned, for failure to pay rent. And Barbara had left a note on the fridge for whoever found them, apologizing for the mess that they would have to clean up.
Oh, that's nice.
Very, very considerate woman.
Really is.
So they found Barbara lying on a waterbed. I love that they pointed out that it was a waterbed, but it was, you know, well, I guess this is the 90s. Waterbeds were big in the 70s and 80s.
They were really big. I had one too. They were still big in the 90s.
But they found Barbara lying on a waterbed. She was clutching a Bible and a cross. She had been shot in the chest twice with a .22 caliber rifle. Jarrett had placed a red rose on her chest, and then it appeared that he had, you know, made it to bed. He went into the adjoining bedroom, covered his head with a blanket, and then shot himself in the head.
Ooh!
So the police assumed it was just a murder-suicide. They found several prescription pills that Barbara had been taking. Jarrett was in a wheelchair due to injuries sustained in a bus accident a few years prior, so they assumed that maybe they were ill, maybe they couldn't afford care, life got to be too much, so they put themselves out of their misery. They had no idea that the letter had been sent to Joni Barrett, where it was kind of a confession that they'd done something, but not really a confession.
Right.
So when Rosgen got back, he found out about the homicide. And he was like, whoa, 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 you can't write this off as just a murder-suicide. There's more to this story.
Mm-hmm.
So he told them that was up. So they gave him the files. When he was looking through the documents and everything that was gathered from the apartment, there was no documents on Nicole, no pictures, all of the pictures in the house, there was no pictures of her at all.
The
last thing anyone knew about Nicole was, you know, right around the beginning of 1978 when they left Michigan. So police,
and how old was she then?
She was two.
Two. Okay.
So police say, you know, she could still be out there somewhere. Like the optimists think, well, maybe they were driving across country. If they were into drugs and they needed drug money, maybe they sold her and some sort of underground adoption.
I love that that's the optimist's point of view.
Yeah. So the main theory is that maybe something happened during the drive across country and they killed her and buried her along, you know, a road between Michigan and Nevada. But who knows what road that would be? There are several different routes they could have taken as well. So it's not likely that if she did die that they're going to find her. I read an article in the LA Times, it was all the way back from 1998, that said the police were considering at that time trying to get DNA from the Klingles in the hopes that maybe if, you know, human remains were found, they'd be able to do at least a partial DNA match on remains. So I don't know if that actually happened or not, or what came of it, but literally the last two people who knew Nicole, who saw her, off themselves. So it's like they lost her twice on Christmas. Like when they took her away. And then I'm sure if Peggy Bezzy had been in contact saying that the detective had, you know, Jarrett had told him. Now, I don't know if this happened, but this was my poor grandparents on Christmas getting a double whammy, like have their hopes up that, okay, he said he's going to set up a meeting with Nicole.
Yeah.
We're going to find our granddaughter. And then, oh, wait, they killed themselves. We have no way to get in touch with her if she is still alive.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
I think, me personally, like you said that they, in their letter, they found God and they were trying to live, you know, a life for him and everything. To me, that screams that they did something to her or that she, because most of the time when we suddenly find God and all of that, it's usually when we're facing some sort of mortality.
Right.
And if they had killed a child, you know, or anybody, if they had killed a child, then that's definitely, that would be something to kind of knock you off your feet and make you question things. So I bet that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, and depending on, I mean, I guess I could see if they were, I mean, Barbara seemed like she was super sensitive. Maybe even just the thought that they sold a baby for drug money.
And then, you know, continued to collect her Social Security benefit that she got from Susan's death. I don't know. Just my opinion. I don't know that I would off myself over that. But then she did mention in the letter that he was going to jail, which, I mean, he was, you know, collecting those Social Security benefits and living off of that, that's fraud.
Yeah.
So he probably would go to jail. And she mentioned not wanting, you know, to live without him. So that's why they off themselves. And Nicole is still alive, which would be great.
I hope they did get some Klingle DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, even, I mean, just now you hear about people finding each other through that 23andMe. Yeah. That would be, I mean, that seems like it would be more likely now that they might be able to find each other if she is alive. Well, I was looking at Peggy Bezzy and
what'd you find?
I can't find anything on her personally. It's just everything is associated with this case.
Got it.
So I don't know. I mean, but goodness, this was a while ago. Man, I hope she's still in business. We picture her as being this older woman, but what if she was like in her 20s? She could easily still be in business.
Perky blonde.
And
Peggy Bezzy.
Hi, this is Peggy Bezzy.
Want to see my boobs?
Is your doggy horny?
Just kidding. What can I do you for?
I love that they all say, what can I do you for? No matter what accent we give them, they can say that.
Totally.
All right. Well, that someone probably died. On both of ours, we really stuck to the name.
We did. I mean, I had at least two deaths.
Yeah. I had at least, I had definitely one, more than likely two others. Yeah. Oh, so depressing.
Go us.
Go holidays.
Right. What kind of, so you have the in memoriam this week.
Oh, yes.
Can't wait to hear
this,
what you have.
You know what? I think that this week is all about the fantastic names.
I can't wait.
Okay. Here is my story for my unusual death. Basil Brown.
Wow.
I know. It gets even better. Basil Brown. He was 48 years old. He was a health food advocate. Okay. This is back in 1974 in Croydon, England.
I was going to say, he has to be from England.
Oh, yes. I wonder Basil. If it was Basil.
Oh, probably.
Basil Brown.
I don't know if he was a health food addict and he was really into herbs.
I mean.
Or herbs if you're uneducated. I like some herbs on my food.
There's an H. But with a name like Basil Brown, of course you're a health food advocate. But he died in 1974 from liver damage.
Okay.
After he consumed 70 million units of vitamin A.
Good Lord.
And around 10 gallons of carrot juice.
In a day?
Over 10 days.
Still.
It turned his skin bright yellow.
I can imagine.
Basil Brown went bright yellow. I feel like a tongue twister can be made out of this. But Basil Brown went bright yellow after drinking carrot juice and consuming vitamin A.
Because carrot juice is also full of vitamin A. So he had like...
He had a lot of vitamin A.
Was he going blind? I mean, was he afraid he was losing his eyesight? Like, I need all the vitamin A.
I don't know. You know, I knew a girl who almost OD'd on potassium. She ate bananas all the time. And she looked like a banana herself. She was blonde and had a yellow tint to her. But we were in camp together and she had to like miss a few days of camp to recover because she had too many bananas. So it is possible.
Right. Oh, it's totally possible.
It is possible to be too healthy. So healthy that you get liver damage.
Well, and that's the thing. Like people think, oh, I have to take all of these supplements to be healthy. But it's like, think of the word supplement. You're supplementing something. Yes. So you're not getting enough of something for your food. So you take a supplement.
Yes.
Doesn't mean you take all the things.
If you're getting it all from your food, girl, don't supplement. You're good.
Right. Like go to your doctor. They can tell you what you're deficient in.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So Basil Brown turned bright yellow. His days were no longer mellow.
I wonder if his pee was really yellow.
Oh my gosh. I don't know what happens.
What's that rhyme? I don't know why this popped in my head when he said yellow and then mellow. And then it made me think of that
Cinderella
rhyme.
Was a...
No, it was like something about if your pee is yellow, like you basically don't flush, let it mellow. Oh. I don't know. It's really gross,
whatever
it is. If it's
yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. That's what it is.
Oh, so it's not colors of pee. It's a turd or a...
If it's, yeah.
A turd or a pee. Number one or a number two.
Yes. Okay. I know that because I've had to say that to my children. But I say, you know what? Even if it's pee, just do it. Just flush it anyway. Okay. Mama, don't need to see that.
I mean, I realize that was probably more back when we didn't have the water-efficient toilets.
Right.
You know, water conservation. But look at us being all environmentally conscious with our murders and our vitamin overdoses. Merry Christmas. Peggy Bessie.
I'm investigating Basil Brown.
He peed himself to death.
And
he was yellow.
Hagers.
That was a yellow fella. What can I do you for? Oh, I think we need to go.
And you know what? I said Wackenhagers, but it's Wacker Hagen. Realized that. No, I think I said it right during the story, but just now, Peggy Bessie got it wrong.
Stupid Peggy.
Peggy Bessie got it wrong.
Good thing. That's why she didn't solve that case.
She was chatting all day long.
We're just going to rhyme our way to our next episode. We're going to let you go, peeps.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Y'all. Bye.
Peggy Bessie says goodbye.
Signing off the Peggy Bessie. Merry Christmas.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. To ensure you don't miss future episodes, head over to iTunes or your favorite podcasting app and subscribe. While you're there, give us a 5-star rating. You know you want to. If you're interested in more information on anything you heard on today's show, check our website at someoneprobablydied.com. Here you'll find past episodes, show notes, and links to a lot more information. Oh, by the way, the opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts, and it should not be assumed that they are shared by our friends, family members, or employers. See you next time.
This podcast was brought to you by Literally Everything.